Hello everyone, Neil Battaglia, thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. Today I speak to Anil Narayan. He is the author of an amazing new book called Smart Scale, How to Get Your First 1,000 Customers in India. Smart Scale is an actionable guide to start and scale a startup in India. So in this podcast, we talk about some great digital marketing strategies you can use today to get your startup off the ground and much, much more. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, Anil Narayan. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
Excellent. And please tell me about this book. Sounds exciting.
Sure. So the book that I wrote, it's called Scale Smart, How to Get Your First 1,000 Customers in India. And there are a lot of these inspirational books out there in the Indian ecosystem. And I did quite a bit of research and I realized there isn't like a how-to book. So I decided to kind of interview a lot of these top entrepreneurs in the country. And then from there, create this how-to guide on, I have an idea, what do I do next? And then how do I scale my business using all these marketing channels that are out there? Mm-hmm. So there are close to, let's say, 25, 30 online and offline channels. And I go really deep into, oh, how did, let's say, Chumbak get 500,000 community members on Facebook? Mm-hmm. How did, let's say, Crowdfire get 5 million followers on Twitter? So it's a very like actionable handbook for the Indian startup ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And what inspired you to do this? What was the light bulb moment?
Actually, that's a great question because so I was in the US from 2011 to 2015, June, and then it was one of those critical times in my life. So my dad had a heart attack, which is pretty scary. Mm-hmm. He's great today, but after that, I was working with Shutterstock on the educational product, and we were given 6 weeks to find another job. And simultaneously, I remember I was dating someone, and then we broke up. So I was like, "Oh my God, what is just happening to me?" And I felt like I don't believe in the universe anymore. And so I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to come back to India because there's so much happening in India. So I said, I'll do 3 months South America, 3 months Africa, and then come back. Mm-hmm. But so in June 2015, I went to South America first. And then while I was there, I got really lucky. I got a consulting gig with a company in the US. So I was working remotely.
Yeah.
And I started doing a lot of these workshops. Growth hacking workshops, digital marketing workshops. And somehow 3 months in South America became 7 months. And I had so much fun digital nomading as well. But then after I decided to come back to India in Jan of 2016. Mm-hmm. So when I was actually doing these workshops in India, a lot of people were like, okay, it's cool that you have all this content for your workshop. Do you have any Indian-focused examples? Mm-hmm. Like Indian startup-focused examples of how they grew their business across channels? And I was like, oh, damn, that's true. Maybe I should be able to get this content from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing like how you're doing this podcast and you're covering a lot of these Indian entrepreneurs, right, and their growth stories. I kind of wanted to get this information. So I decided to interview a lot of these top entrepreneurs. And I got a foot in the door with Ankur Variko, who's the founder of Nearby, mm-hmm. at a startup conference. And surprisingly, the ecosystem is quite small on the top. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it became this collection of content across the board. And I think, Neil, like one of the bits was, should I write a book which is taking each of these companies from idea to product market fit to scale and kind of convert this into a course or a blog post? But I felt in terms of an impact or reach, I think the book might make more sense.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about growth then. When should one start, you know, growth, that growth hacking process?
The way I break down any startup growth is you're launching an idea, you kind of reach in this point called product market fit, mm-hmm. and then you're looking to scale. And product market fit obviously is I have a product that fits the need of a market. And you can quantify this, right? Like if you have people, if you have one paying customer, you've had product market fit. Mm-hmm. If you have these early adopters going, oh my God, I love your product or service, mm-hmm. you've had product market fit. But the different ways to quantify it as well. There's something called a net promoter score, which you can measure. So that's on a scale of 1 to 10. How likely would you recommend this product or service? Mm-hmm. And you want your net promoter score to be above 30, right? Mm-hmm. So there are like these different metrics. And I feel like once you've hit this point called product market fit, that's when you should look at, okay, how can I get more of my customers? Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest challenge today you'll see with most startup entrepreneurs, Neil, is that they're like, I'm not going to talk to anyone initially. I have this product. I'm going to work on it for 3 to 6 months. I'm going to prototype the whole thing. And then boom, when they actually talk to their first customer, they're like, this person doesn't really want my product or service, which is really scary, right? So I would recommend for every startup entrepreneur is do the exploration phase where you talk to as many customers face-to-face. And then once you hit this product market fit phase, you really scale with a lot of these marketing channels that you can use, which is to your disposal.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it seems like I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs. Their number one tactic is Facebook still. Where are we with Facebook now? Is it still like the number one marketing channel for like B2C?
I think it's important for people to start thinking of Facebook as an assisted conversion channel, which is, I will focus on creating my audience on Facebook. But then finally, when people want to use your product, they might directly type your URL or they might search you on Google, right? And what's happening with Facebook today, it is still your responsibility to build communities and not sell. And sure, a lot of your audiences still reside on Facebook, but it's you got to get smarter about using Facebook. So even though it could be the number one channel, like when I say smarter, Facebook is pushing out stories. Facebook is pushing out native video content. And they're focusing on news content. So you have to, in some sense, focus on maybe creating more video content and then embed that on Facebook.
Actually, I was speaking to an entrepreneur who's using WhatsApp for marketing. That seems quite interesting, especially in India.
I actually absolutely agree with you. So what's happened today is, this is very surprising, even businesses today, right? Like, let's say if I have a client, my client and I will interact on WhatsApp. And sometimes you can cut both ways, right? Like I'll get a message on a Saturday evening saying, hey, by the way, can you look into this? And I'm like, I shouldn't have given my number on WhatsApp, right? But I think the good thing that's come out of this, though, is you can hit 250 people straight up, right? In a group if you want it. And they're extremely engaged. Almost everyone will read your piece. You're seeing businesses kind of use WhatsApp in the form of small cohorts 250, or you also have Telegram where businesses are switching, okay, I'm going to have a bigger group and I'm going to kind of take them or funnel them into Telegram and then have maybe groups of like 5,000 or 10,000.
Excellent. Okay, let's talk about the book then. What was the most sort of surprising thing that you learned about doing this book?
The surprising thing was actually maybe a couple of things. One is there is a lot of room on the top. And when I mean on the top, right, like let's say each of these guys, so I've interviewed, let's say the founder of Baiju, the founder of Chumbuk, founder of InMobi. These are billion-dollar companies or multi-hundred-million-dollar companies, right? And if you get a foot in the door with one individual, it is easy for you to connect with all these entrepreneurs in one shot. And I thought that was fascinating because given the fact that obviously we have 4 million internet users today, like you would assume the ecosystem is so fragmented given that people are in Delhi and Bombay and Bangalore and all these cities. It is actually quite easy once you get one person who is your champion or your evangelist. Second is, what I realized with interviewing a lot of these people is like the online game in India has really picked up, as in we're going to have maybe the most number of internet users, English speaking internet users across the world, but it'll always be an online offline play. And what I mean by that is people were still quite trust deficit. So the purchasing, as much as the purchasing power is increasing, we still need quite a bit amount of social validation before people buy these products. Online. And so television still ends up being like, oh my God, these guys got covered on television. Like, maybe I should check the product out, you know? Unlike the West, or unlike, I guess, the UK, where I've seen, at least when I was in the US, like, people are quite happy to be the early adopters or startups because they know, like, startups have more to lose. And so they'll service them better, or you'll get a better attention if you work with any of these startups. The third aspect that I think which has been quite interesting is Indian startups are either trying to be hyper-local or go global. So anyone who is doing a lot of very tech-heavy tools which can be applied across the world, they're creating disruptions from India, mm-hmm. as well as we're doing stuff which is hyper-local, right? Like whether it's a food delivery, whether it's groceries. So I think we're in a very interesting phase where we can either be super confused on the kind of problems we want to solve, mm-hmm. or we're like, oh my God, I have all these opportunities for the problems in terms of what we can solve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. It seems everyone's obsessed with going viral. What's your thought on that, being the growth expert?
I feel like there isn't still this formula for virality
okay.
that people have figured out. Obviously, there's the ingredients of connecting with your consumer, creating content that's of absolute importance to, let's say, your target demographic. Mm. But to be honest, like, consistency today should still be what most startups should focus on rather than virality. Like, you know, it's funny, like, whenever I do any of these workshops, also need, like, people are like, hey, give me a growth hack. And it's like, the growth hack isn't necessarily your one step towards success, right? And like, most companies are like, oh, I want to be on TechCrunch. I want to be on your story, like these top publications. Assume like visitors are just going to flow through their website. Mm. And I think virality is overrated. Mm-hmm. Genuinely, I feel like consistency wins. Like if you have 103 episodes that you have created for your Indian Startup Show, that's going to help you rank better over a period of time rather than that one piece which took you or like which you blew out of the park, you know? Mm-hmm.
Excellent. No, good point. You mentioned Shutterstock before. Can you remember what type of like growth hacks or experiments you did at Shutterstock?
Sure. So with Shutterstock, I worked on their educational product. Mm-hmm. It's called Skillfeed. And it was a marketplace where you could come and access any form of content. So when I say any form of courses, rather. So course on entrepreneurship to tech to design. And so there were technical courses as well as non-technical courses, and you had to pay $19 a month to access all these courses. And I was given quite a healthy marketing budget. So I was given like, honey, here's $250,000, mm-hmm. with $25,000 a month as marketing budget. Run as many experiments you can across channels. So I personally took care of running Facebook ads, running Twitter ads, doing AdWords to radio, and creating landing pages, creating copy. So what really worked for us was my goal was how do we acquire one customer for less than $35? Mm-hmm. And surprisingly for us, Twitter worked really well. And when I say Twitter, like at that point in time in 2015, Twitter ads, we were able to get more bang for the buck from Twitter ads.
Yeah.
And so I would run like 9 to 10 different campaigns with each campaign focused on a specific segment. Mm-hmm. We got conversions approximately at $28. So that was one. But in terms of copy, for example, if you used like numbers, like for example, oh, we have over 60,000 courses online versus Become a Skilled Marketer had, so the numbers actually had better conversions or better click-through rates than the other one. Mm-hmm. And what else? I think there were exit overlays that we tried at that point that worked quite well on the landing pages. So exit overlays are like, okay, I come onto your landing page and then let's say when you're looking to exit the site, this overlay drops. Mm-hmm. So we had this overlay of like, we tried free trial of like 7 days versus 14 days versus 30 days versus 60 days. Mm-hmm. For us, 30 days made the most sense and we had the most number of conversions. Mm. So I think just even playing around the copy, playing around the numbers, playing around the design, I guess, was some of the hacks that actually worked for us.
Interesting stuff. In terms of email marketing, that's still very important in terms of like MailChimp, et cetera, et cetera. Any thoughts on email marketing or how to get your email marketing off the ground?
I think because there's an overload of content today, right? Everything is getting flooded. Your email inbox is getting flooded. I am forced to, like, if I'm skimming through my Feedly, which is a reading app, I have a ton of content that gets thrown at me. And I think the ones that are dominating in email are obviously creating the pull, which is I will throw a lot of value at you, but I'll be very consistent about throwing value at you regularly. So I signed up, surprisingly, I signed up for this webinar recently by this guy named Sai.coach. He's like a executive coach. And he sends an email out every day. And I said, and to be honest, like 30 emails over 30 days, I don't end up opening like 20 of them. But what he has done, at least, is because it's value content, I end up opening some of them. But every time I'm thinking about, okay, maybe I should hire a coach, I think of Sai. Similarly, like Ramit Sethi has this I Will Teach You to Be Rich, where he sends 40 emails over 40 days and then finally upsells you on a $1,000 course. So today, consistently, I'm saying these are edge cases where I can be consistent and I can actually literally flood your emails as long as I'm providing value consistently. But there are a lot of things that you can automate via emails. I personally feel that there should be some email that you should like just automate as a no-brainer. Transactional emails, abandonment emails, welcome emails. So have that in place. Use their names. I think emojis and subject lines are actually working really well. If most of the emails are actually going into your updates folder, you can, in the first email, be like, hey, listen, this email will go into your updates. Star this email or add me in your contacts so that it goes into your primary inbox. So there are things like that that you can start doing. But I personally feel email is, things are switching from email to a WhatsApp, to a Telegram, to a Slack channel, where you have communities that you can be part of. And emails become an absolute like office-related one-on-one email or one-to-many rather than a selling platform. That's my take. People still believe, I think, like emails are like, oh my God, you can get 40x revenue from emails. I'm somewhere on the fence about the longevity of emails today.
Excellent. What's the main thing you want people to get out of the book?
I guess the framework to think. I genuinely feel that a lot of entrepreneurs in India, right, like the first thing they do is, I feel really bad for some people. I remember like I was talking to someone at WeWork, and this lady is a event planner. She plans a lot of these weddings, and so she decided to hire someone for Facebook. And this person would send out 11 to 12 posts a month for $600 a month.
Wow.
And I was like, are you getting any conversions from that? And she's like, not really, and I'm spending so much money. And I was like, wow, like these people have decided to get into entrepreneurship. And their first assumption was, we're going to try Facebook. And they didn't necessarily know what they had to do per channel. And I want to make sure I help people like those where they're like, okay, I have this idea. Let me give you a framework on how to actually create your marketing channel, which is super simple. And then know exactly what needs to be done per channel so that increases your odds of success tremendously.
That's good answer to that. And in terms of growth, let's say someone's listening to this and they want to get into the growth side of things. What advice would you give them?
Surprisingly, this is more offline, but I think people should spend at least 30 minutes to an hour networking on a weekly basis. You won't believe how, like, you can do a ton of things online, but like knowing someone can just open up. We're finally still humans. We're still going to do business based on trust. Mm-hmm. I just feel like building those networks, those relationships over a period of time can have long-lasting effects, whether you're looking to raise money, whether you're looking to get new business, especially in an Indian ecosystem, which can be quite trust deficit. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, if you can spend 30 minutes to an hour every day just learning new things around growth, mm-hmm. you know, like whether it's learning from your podcast, whether it's learning from growthhackers.com, like I feel like we get ideas from obviously the experiments that we run, but like constantly communicating or constantly seeking content around you, mm-hmm. I think can enhance your learning. So this is outside of marketing, but I think it has an amplified effect of consistency over the long run.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, good stuff. So we mentioned Facebook, we mentioned Twitter. Where are we with YouTube then? Any sort of thoughts on growing a YouTube channel or using YouTube to grow a business?
Absolutely. I think, so the first thing a lot of people need to do is be like, okay, I've identified who my persona is, where they're hanging out on and offline. Let's say a lot of your persona is consuming video content or YouTube content. The way to actually hack or create your YouTube strategy is first, like, again, everything, the standards, there are two main frameworks that I would recommend that every person should follow. One is creating primary, secondary, tertiary content. Mm-hmm. So primary content is related to your business, secondary content is related to your industry, tertiary content is related to your persona. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I cover in the book as well. But so let's say if I have a marketing tool, primary content becomes educating people around the tool, secondary content becomes more around the marketing space itself, and tertiary could be is entrepreneurship, startups, like mm-hmm. things that I would be interested in, right? And I think with YouTube, the ones that are really dominating YouTube are at least creating two videos a week. And there's a beautiful tool called VidIQ. So that's VidIQ that I would recommend more startups using. And what I think a lot of people need to start thinking about for YouTube is the views to the subscriber ratio. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, let's say if the views is 10,000 and I have 100 subscribers, it's a 100x ratio, right? Whereas if I have 10,000 subscribers to 10,000 views, that's a 1x ratio. Mm-hmm. Now, when the ratio of the views to subscribers, let's say, is 10x or 100x, where the views are tremendously high compared to subscribers, that means YouTube has made sure to push that video out because it was searched every day or there was relevancy for that content. Mm-hmm. And using the tool VidIQ, you can actually find out engagement rates. You can find out ratio of subscribers to the views. You can also measure that if you wanted. And you could create a strategy around that. So you analyze all the videos on YouTube where the ratio is extremely high and be like, you know what, can I do a better job of creating content in comparison to these videos? And the videos that are done really well are between 3 and 10 minutes. Mm. You can look at the highest engagement rate videos and be like, oh, these ones seem to have an overlay. These seem to use contrasting colors on their image. Mm. They have done a great job on their SEO. So a lot of description with the hashtags and URLs at the bottom. So I know I got on the nitty-gritties with YouTube, but that's something I think a lot of people start thinking about. Mm.
It seems it's all about algorithms. Facebook, Twitter. If you know that what the algorithm is, then you can sort of create a growth hack around it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's, you hit the nail on the head, Neil, is if you understand the nuances of a platform, you can create a framework of growth around that platform. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And what's your thought on like social influencers on YouTube and Instagram, etc., etc.? They must play a part as well if you wanted to promote a book or a...
Yeah, I still believe it's the number one platform or is the number one way to push anything out. Mm. At the end of the day, publishing houses. So for example, Michelle Obama, let's say, has released a book and it's on everything, right? It's on Forbes, it's on Wall Street Journal, New Yorker. And I think if you consider them as brands, they're influential brands or influential publishing brands. Mm. And the advantage of influencers is they've humanized a lot of the interactions. Mm. Right, there is a person behind it. person with a voice saying, you know what, I think this product is awesome, you should use it. And I think psychologically, almost all of us humans, we're wired to pay heed or respect to an opinion that comes from a place of influence. So if anyone wanted to create an influencer strategy, I think the best way to do it is obviously incentivize the influencer heavily, but make sure a lot of the influencers push it out simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So that creates this amplified effect for your content or for your brand or your service.
Excellent. Just quickly talk about you. Did you always want to get into growth? How did you get into this?
I don't know. I feel like, I mean, we answered this offline with you, but did you know that you always wanted to start a podcast? Right? Like, and I think you fell in love with the process after some time, right?
Yeah.
And I think something similar happened. Like, I was doing some form of sales and business development, and I think I was working at a startup called Lean Startup Machine, mm-hmm. and we were 12 of us, or sorry, actually 11 of us, and we had to do a lot of things across the board, right? From creating funnels to selling to talking to customers. And I think when you're kind of forced to do a lot of things across the board, you're forced to automate and create processes. And we are forced to learn these things. And I was just honestly really excited about the learning of, oh my God, we can automate this. We can create this behavioral campaign around this. And I just got really curious from there. And it happened accidentally. And then I enjoyed the process. And then from there, it became, oh my God, how do I create landing pages? To how do I run an AdWords campaign? And today, now I'm trying to figure out, okay, you know what? How do I create a YouTube channel? Mm-hmm. Can I dominate YouTube? And I've done it for a lot of brands, and now I'm trying to figure out how to do it for myself. Mm-hmm. So I think this happened quite accidentally, Neil, mm-hmm. to be honest. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you mentioned America and South America. How would you sum up your time?
So
was it all work, or did you enjoy the lifestyle as well?
I think with 2000, so I was in the US from 2011 to 2015, June. And I'll tell you what I liked, what the good and not so good was about being in the US. I think what I loved about the US was the productivity, the efficiency in terms of things. Most people were straight shooters in terms of what they liked or didn't like about something. And I think sometimes I have sometimes come from a culture where it's a yes, no. It's like, yeah, I love your product, man. Yeah. And then, like, boom, you don't hear about that. And I thought I learned so much more about the world being in the US. In terms of, also, I said, like, efficiency in time and, like, diversity in cultures. Like, I was in New York, and just the fact that people are fundamentally the same was so humbling for me. Like, you can assume, I don't know, like, Neil, like, I know you've been in the UK all your life, but I think being in India, right, like,
yeah,
my exposure is very, like, was at least very media, was very US-UK media. Mm-hmm. So you can assume that's your perspective of the world. Mm-hmm. And once you go there, you realize actually it's quite a different ballgame. That's not necessarily how it is as portrayed in media, right? Whereas in Latin America, I think what I really liked was it's a beautiful, beautiful continent. I mean, I feel if you really love nature, you have to go to Ecuador, you have to go to Colombia. Argentina is unbelievable. Unfortunately, there's a language, like, everyone speaks Spanish, at least most of them speak Spanish. So you don't end up hearing enough about it mm-hmm. on the news. But again, people are supremely friendly. Things are a little slow, but happens a lot through referrals and trust. Mm-hmm. Whereas I felt like in the US, you could cold call or you could cold email someone and be like, I love what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Can we get coffee? Mm-hmm. You know? So I think that those were the fundamental differences between the US and, I guess, Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Last question then. For people who want more information on the book, what must they do?
So I can share a URL with you at the end of this also, but it's available on Amazon, Flipkart, mm-hmm. iBooks, Google Books, like all these platforms. So you can just type Scale Smart mm-hmm. In any of the search bars and you should find the book. Mm-hmm. or you can also get on Notion Press, which is a publisher, and you can buy the book directly off the publisher as well.
Annie, thank you for coming on the show today. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you. Good Take night. Care.
Thank you. Bye, bye, bye.
Thanks for Annie for coming on the show today, and check out the show notes for more information on how to get the book. Thank you for listening, and if you want to come on the show, please email me hello@neilpatel.co. And let's connect on facebook.com/IndianStartupShow and Twitter @StartIndianStartupSH. Thank you and goodbye.